Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me always, Blake Harrison. Hello.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. This is a early Sunday morning recording. I mean, it was lovely. I mean, before we get into what today's show's about, I got to watch UFC. I had no plans on a Saturday night, and I just realised that UFC started at 4 p.m. Oh, it was heaven. I just got to watch loads of it, and then I saved the last couple of fights, and I watched them this morning when I got up. But yeah, I've watched the UFC live, and it's 9:30 on a Sunday morning, and I'm not half asleep. I feel great. You all right?
I didn't have quite the same experience. So I'm over in Belfast filming at the moment, and majority of the people that I'm filming with are like 10 years younger than me. They all wanted a night out. It started with a bit of bowling, so that was the afternoon. So I'm fortunately watching Jack Shaw and Ricky Simone fight on my phone. Well, we'll get into that in a bit, but I was watching them fight on my phone whilst bowling. I did win the bowling, yeah, no big deal, don't worry about it. Then it all got a bit like young, it all got a bit too young because...
Or did you get a bit too old?
Well, potato. It was basically like, we had a few snacks at the bowling or whatever, which we then left at maybe like, I don't know, 7-ish. And I'm like, right, well, we're going for food now, right, guys? No. We go to someone's apartment and we're just like there drinking for like 2.5 hours. And it gets to like gone 9 o'clock. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Why aren't people hungry? Like, as a dad of young children, my dinner time now is about 5 p.m. So for us to get to gone 9 o'clock and we haven't eaten, I'm pretty sure one of the other actors just looked at me and then stood up and went, guys, I think we need to go and get some food. And I said to him, I was like,
Blake's crying.
Blake's just crying in the corner, eating his own face. But I was like, did you realise? He was like, oh yeah, I could totally tell that you were like getting pissed off because you were hungry. So that's good. Yeah, so we ended up like going for food, not eating until like nearly 10 o'clock, and then went to like a club afterwards and stuff. And it was like the most I'd like drunk and danced and all that stuff for many, many years. So yeah, I'm on maybe about five hours late, and it was like I was intermittently watching stuff because I got back here and like I drink things like, I don't know, like a vodka and coke, a rum and coke, something like that. So I get back and I didn't feel too drunk, even though I had quite a lot to drink, but I'm buzzing on caffeine and sugar. So I can't sleep. So I watched loads of the fights like later on. Like I watched, you know, Ortega, Rodriguez and all those fights later on at like 2 a.m. So I did it the reverse. The one time that the UFC was on at a good British time, I watched it like it was on like America time and I was watching it in bed at like 2 a.m. So, yeah, a little bit all over the shop, but we'll get through it.
Well, should we touch on a few highlights from last night? I mean, let's first of all talk about Tank versus Ricky Simon. And I mean, heartbreaking. We love Jack Shorey on this podcast. You know, he's such a top lad, and it was a tough night in the Octagon for him. I think he was starting. It felt to me he was starting to establish his range a little bit. I thought it was a tight first round. I don't know if I would have given the first round to Jack. I thought maybe Ricky took it. I mean, as much as the ending wasn't what we wanted, you've got to say impressive performance from Ricky Simon.
Yeah. I mean, again, I was watching it whilst intermittently bowling. So it was a bit of a strange one. But it did seem like Ricky just got the better of him in a few situations. Ricky maybe had the better wrestling. He had more power in his shots. And Jack got clipped with a big shot in that second round, which led to him going down and getting the arm triangle. Look, I mean, will Jack improve from this? I'm sure he will. I mean, it's such a tricky thing because I think
he got caught flush on the temple.
Yeah, and he was still, you know, surviving for a while. Yeah. I think this shows how deep the bantamweight division is. I think it shows I think both those guys are really talented. I think Ricky Simon will do really well. I think he could be a top five guy. I think he's actually got a lot that he can still show. And as I say, do very, very well in this division. So losing to Ricky Simon is no kind of like slight on Jack at all. But what I think happens now is going to be difficult for Jack, because I do think that the UFC are happy to feed him to the wolves type thing. I do think that whoever won this fight, I think they were going to push maybe and try and get some good fights. Maybe a Sean O'Malley, I know Ricky called him out, or something good, and move them up the rankings. But for the loser of this fight, there are lots of people waiting in the wings outside the rankings that are champing at the bit. I can't remember what we said. Definitely not choking at the bit, which is what you said many moons ago.
I love the fact that you thought you might get it wrong, but I'll tell you what, I'm just going to throw Stu right under the bus.
Oh, yeah. No, chomping or champing is like, you can interchange those. Choking at the bit is not a phrase. They've paired Jack up before with like Saeed Nurmagomedov,
yeah.
Umar Nurmagomedov. These are people that I think Jack's got a number next to his name, and those guys they should be fighting people with numbers next to their names. And I think Jack coming off a loss those other guys will be looking at that and going, yep, that's our next fight. That's our guy. We want to get a number next to our name. So it's not going to be easy for Jack. The fights may even only get harder. When you look at Saeed and Umar Nurmagomedov, Jesus, they look so, so talented. So, yeah, I think Jack's going to be potentially in a difficult spot. But look, Jack's got a great attitude.
Talent.
He's very, very talented. So hopefully he can pull it back and do really well. But there's no easy matches left for Jack. Not that he's necessarily had easy matches, but like,
no,
the future looks not like he's looking down the barrel of loads of losses, but it looks hard. It looks difficult.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously he got his first loss last night, but his record's so impressive. And when you get to that point of your career, looking, you know, into that top 10, there's never going to be easy fights. And I know that's definitely not the case in that division. You know, some divisions you could probably go, well, do you know what? Yeah, I reckon I'll comfortably take a couple of them. But you look at that, and it is stacked. It really is. But I just want to talk about Ricky Simon again, though, because he just had a good game plan there. Went in as the underdog as well, and I thought he looked solid. He looked like really, really strong. His boxing was good. Obviously, Jack's boxing, you know, he boxes under Gary Lockett, which, you know, is absolute legend. you know, Jack's boxing was sharp. He was establishing that jab. But this is UFC. You know, this is mixed martial arts. He got caught with a shot on the temple. And there's nothing you can do about that. When you get that shot on the temple, your legs go. Whatever your head's saying, your legs go. And he went down and he tried to do his best. And it's, you know, I'm sure it's a tough pill for Jack to swallow. But he's a very, very talented young boy. And I can't wait to see him come back, you know, a better fighter. You know, drawing from that loss. I don't think he made big mistakes. He just got caught, and that's the, you know, that is what why this sport's so exciting, because it can change and it can flip itself so quickly.
And losses can sometimes be really beneficial for fighters. Like,
absolutely,
again, Ricky Simon lost to Uriah Faber a few years ago. Look at what he's done since.
Got,
you know,
caught, was dominating, yeah, the fight. Got caught.
That is that as you said, this shit happens, and sometimes it can actually be something that spurs a fighter on, or makes them realise they had a weakness, or something that they need to strengthen, or something like that, and it can lead to them actually having a better career after the loss. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's not do a big deep dive into this card, but I would say it was a great card. Like, I thought yeah, pretty much every fight was well decent.
I mean, Burgos Charles Jourdain was a great fight.
Oh my life, that was incredible.
Yeah, and Matt Schnell gave one of the best comebacks I've ever seen. He was getting, yep, lit up and taking some big elbows, jelly legs, and then, yep, just came back. It was phenomenal.
Li Jingliang looked awesome. Like, what a nice little finish that was. And yeah, I thought Waterson Lemos fight was great. I thought it was. I could see that, like, you could tell that the Karate Hot, he was trying to kind of keep moving, stay out of the range, because Amanda throws bombs and they look heavy. At one point, she threw a left hook and literally nearly span herself around in a circle. There's power in that lady's arms. And I thought Waterson was doing good. It was like kick for kick. Every time someone was throwing, she was throwing straight back. But, yeah, I just think it was a decent submission, and I'm interested to see where Amanda goes now. I think she's a threat.
I think the main event, to me, felt like one of the worst outcomes the UFC could possibly have had, because they've announced Makhachev versus Oliveira, Charles, for the lightweight belt. Which makes you think, well, I mean, to be fair, Volkanovski's got the hand surgery or something he has to go through, because he broke his hand in the Holloway fight. So he is probably going to be out for a while. But it means now that with Makhachev fighting Oliveira, maybe Volk won't be going up immediately. Although he did put out some kind of tweet or something saying, oh, who am I fighting next? When he had a picture of the Makhachev and Oliveira fight announcement. So maybe he thinks he is going up in weight to take on the winner of that fight. But it makes me think that if Rodriguez had, say, finished Ortega in a more, you know, expected way, not like an injury, but like he knocked him out, or he armbarred him, or something.
He then weren't knocking out Brian Ortega.
I don't know,
he,
man.
He hit him flush.
Yeah, but it was still like the first round, wasn't it? Like over
just
five
walk through
rounds.
It. Like, boy's, well, got a chin.
Well, of course, we know Ortega's got a chin for sure. But I mean, Rodriguez has got some amazing. I mean, look what he did to Korean Zombie, that weird, yeah, upward elbow after losing that fight until like the final second. But my point is, had Rodriguez, say, knocked out Ortega, so I think it would have been obvious to go, do you know what, Volk? Fight Rodriguez, and then maybe you can think about moving up. Beat another featherweight. Try and kind of clear out the division a little bit before you move up, because lightweight is kind of log-jammed as it is. So that would have made a lot of sense. But now you're looking at a situation where Josh Emmett thinks he's done enough to get the title shot, but I don't really think he has. Rodriguez coming off of a weird win where Ortega's like dislocated his shoulder or whatever, that doesn't feel like enough to give you a title shot. Arnold Allen's in there on a 9-fight win streak, but still hasn't really built on the momentum since the Dan Hooker fight that he won. So you've got kind of three guys there, and I can see, again, I feel like this is ending up being potentially bad for Arnold Allen, because I can see a world in which they go, do you know what? There's no clear featherweight number one. Volk's got to have his hand surgery or whatever it is. He's going to be out for a while. Let's make a fight between two of these guys. And they will probably go for Josh Emmett and Jair Rodriguez. And then what's Arnold Allen doing then? Does he get the Korean Zombie fight? Or does Korean Zombie not really fancy it anymore? What's really in it for him fighting Arnold Allen? Does he? Does Korean Zombie think about retiring or something like that? Does Arnold Allen get put in this really shitty place where he has to fight like a Movsar Evloev or something like that? Like, I just feel like it really delays the featherweight division. And what I felt would have been the best thing to happen would have been Rodriguez beats Ortega convincingly. Rodriguez fights Volkanovski. And then Josh Emmett and Arnold Allen fight each other for a clear, like, number one contender after a Rodriguez-Volkanovski fight. That would have been, I think, the best way for things to play out for the UFC and for the featherweight division. And now we're looking at another weird situation where you're like, you don't know what's happening. Someone's going to get left in a bad spot and it's going to take ages. And yeah, I don't think it's a great spot.
Yeah, I would not want to be in that room with Benil Dariush. It's a lonely place.
Oh, God, I wasn't even thinking about Benil. The poor old Benil. What's he going to... He's going to have to fight someone random, isn't he?
So rough, man.
It's just the way it goes. Again, it's not always a meritocracy. Like, I mean, you can make an argument that Makhachev deserves his title shot against Oliveira, sure, but there's also an argument that Dariush deserves it. And the most meritocratic thing to do would have been to have those two fight, to then fight Oliveira for what is now a vacant belt.
100%. That's the fight.
But like, the UFC have got a show in Abu Dhabi in October. And who do they want on the Abu Dhabi card? They want Islam Makhachev. So it's, you know, it's numbers and politics and economics and all that shit, which is part of the sport that us as fans, we don't really give two shits about, but it's part of the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, should we start at the top?
UFC London. Let's do it.
So, I mean, the last hour into the O2, what a night. You know, the card was absolutely chocker from top to bottom. And obviously with this card, it's another monster card. However, we've lost a big fight from the roster, which we'll get to. But top of the bill, Tom Aspinall, Curtis Blaydes. I mean, that's, as I think we've touched upon it previously, of all the fights in that division, I think for Tom, this is probably the last fighter that you probably choose, because super quick, super athletic, hits hard, wrestles well, you know, all the things that Tom does. It's got the makings of an incredible fight, but I don't know. How do you see this one going?
Oh, I think it's a really tough one. Tom has admitted himself. I love Tom because Tom's just so honest. There's none of that kind of like fighter bullshit with Tom. He's a really honest guy, and I really like Tom for that. And I think even him himself, he said, Curtis Blaydes is probably the toughest opponent for me in the heavyweight division.
And
it is a shame that they've matched these two up like this now, because I feel like we're in a position where we've got a mini number one contender tournament happening in front of our eyes. It's just not labelled as such, because you've got situations with Ngannou where we're like, is he going to re-sign with the UFC? What's happening with the champ? They really want to do Jones versus Miocic for an interim belt. So those two are there. So again, all these really talented younger fighters
and you've got
underneath.
Ty versus...
Well, that's what I'm getting to. All these talented fighters underneath, the younger fighters, they're kind of all in this weird little like log jammy spot, and I think that's what the tournament is, because I think Ngannou's there waiting to see if he's going to fight Tyson Fury and if he's going to re-sign with the UFC and all that bullshit.
He might be fighting Nate Diaz. Did you see that?
No, I didn't, but I think someone said something that makes me think I know roughly what you're talking about.
Incredible.
But But yeah, so the Jones, Miocic, yeah, they're the two big names. I understand why people would want to do that as an interim belt. Fine, whatever. But then you've got, as you say, Aspinall Blaydes and Garn Tuivasa, which is happening in Paris in early September. And I think that's the four-man mini tournament that's going on at the moment. And of those four, Blaydes is the hardest fight for Tom, in my opinion. I think he can take Ty down and avoid the power shots pretty well. Yep. I think with Garn showed real weaknesses in his ground game against Francis. And I think Tom could exploit that really well. Although the stand-up battle between those two would be great because they've both got such great footwork and a really nimble heavyweight. But Curtis Blaydes for Tom is... He's got good fundamental striking. His hand speed's nowhere near as good as Tom. His footwork isn't as good as Tom. But he's got good fundamental striking. And we saw that in the Chris Dorcas fight recently. But Blaydes' major attributes is his wrestling. He's just got such great wrestling. And it'll be really interesting to see if Tom's jiu-jitsu can best Curtis's wrestling, or whether that kind of top pressure of someone like Curtis Blaydes being on top of you, if he does get to take Tom down, is just too much for him. I think Tom has more of a variety of ways to win this fight than Curtis Blaydes does. I think Curtis Blaydes' real way of winning the fight is getting takedowns and top pressure. And if you're Curtis Blaydes, I think you want this fight to go into the later rounds. Because Tom's never seen a third round in his whole career. Not just UFC. He's never seen a third round. I think the total of his UFC fights, was he had like five UFC fights or something like that. The total of his UFC fights has accumulated to about 14 minutes. That's madness. And Curtis Blaydes is someone that's used to going... the distance, five rounds, three rounds, whatever it is. So if you're Curtis Blaydes, I think you're thinking, let me just survive the first round and a half, even if I give that away and lose it, and let's take Tom into deeper waters. And I mean, I'm sure Tom's training really well and he's got the gas tank to deal with that stuff, but it's a question that might need to be asked if you're Curtis Blaydes, because we've not seen it in the UFC before. And if you're Curtis Blaydes' coach and on his team, you're probably going, let's see how well this guy fights in the third, fourth, and fifth round. So let's just be a bit defensive to begin with, and then put the pressure on a bit later on when Tom's getting a bit tired, and see how he goes.
He's I'm just going through Blaydes' record. He's not going to be freaked out, I think, by the roar that's going to be for Tom when he walks into the O2. I'm just looking. Obviously, if he's got two losses to Francis, and a loss to Derek Lewis, but he has beaten Olenek, Mark Hunt, Overeem, JDS, Rosenstrike, and Chris Dorcas. I mean, that's a Volkov. That's a serious resume he's got there. And yeah, I just think this has got all the makings for a really good fight. And I think if he tries to maul Tom with his wrestling, I just think Tom's ground game's solid. I think if it goes to the ground, I think maybe Tom gets a finish there. And I think if they stand and strike, I think it'd be interesting. But as we know, Tom's got a background as a boxer as well. And his footwork, as we've seen, he's remarkable. Yeah. He moves so quickly. His hand speed is ridiculous. Well.
Yeah. His head movement's great. That one where he slipped off to the side in the Volkov fight and then shot for that takedown.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think striking-wise, Tom's got a good advantage because of that hand speed and stuff as well. On the ground, that's where it gets a little bit more interesting, the wrestling versus the jiu-jitsu. And I know what you mean about the finishing acumen of Tom on the ground, but when you've got someone as good as Curtis maybe on in top position raining down punches and elbows, that's a position that I think even someone like Tom, who's a BJJ black belt and is very good on the ground, I think even he would be like, I definitely don't want to be under Curtis while he's raining down punches.
Unless you're Paul Craig, he likes that.
And Paul Craig would just slip it. Paul Craig on his back, just slipping left and right and just waiting for the triangle to come. Oh, man. Love you, Paul. Absolutely fantastic.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to get off the fence because obviously I've been told that I'll sit on the fence. Tom gets the win. What are you saying?
I'm going to say a Tom win, but I think it's going to be really interesting if this does see a third round to see how Tom goes. I think it might be really good for him as well. Like, I think maybe the best thing to happen to Tom would be if he won this by decision, because just to get those five rounds under his belt against a top elite level guy like Curtis Blaydes. Because the one thing is as well, Curtis Blaydes has only, as you pointed out, got three losses. And what's the thing that links all of them is they were to the two biggest elite level power punchers in the UFC ever, like Ngannou and Derek Lewis. Tom's got fantastic hand speed, and obviously as a heavyweight he clearly hits hard, and he could knock Blaydes out. But he's not in the league of Ngannou or Derek Lewis when it comes to just sheer one-punch knockout power.
He's been hit hard by other fighters. You think how hard Mark Hunt hits. You think, you know, Alistair Overeem. You know, these are big strikers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I'm going Tom all day.
Good. Good.
As if I could pick Blaydes. As if I could sit here and pick Blaydes. No way. Got to pick Tom.
All right. Well, look, we've obviously got the news a couple of weeks ago that Darren Till has got injured and will no longer be fighting Jack O'Manson in the co-main at 185. I've heard there's a video doing the rounds of Darren's injury happening. Have you seen that? I haven't.
I haven't seen a video of the injury, but I have seen that he did some kind of YouTube or podcasting or something where he's talking really openly about how shit things have been for him and how gutted he is about the injury, and he's just in a really low place. And I don't know if he said he's not sure if he wanted to fight anymore or anything like that, but it seems like he's lost the love for it for a bit. And I don't know if that's because of the injuries, because, I mean, imagine that the thing that you love to do and you're lucky enough to get paid for it, and someone just turns around to you and goes, no, you can't do that for a while because you're injured or because you're whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on at the moment. And we spoke to Paddy Pimblett about that as one of our first episodes of this podcast, like about a year ago or so now, when he was first on the show. And he was talking about, the, you know, when you're injured and you can't train and you can't do the thing you love to do and earn the money in the way that you want to do it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It impacts your mental health, and it sounds to me like Darren is going through a really tough time with that at the moment. So wishing Darren well, I hope he gets healthy and I hope he gets his head right, because I was really excited to see him come back. Since the whole bromance with Chimaev, it made me think, oh, he's back in the game. He wants it now.
I wanted to see him take Hermanson down and see what he was going to do. I wanted to see if the wrestling had just, you know, he was comfortable there, Till.
Or Hermanson take him down.
No, I wanted to see Till take him down and see
That would never happen.
Well, I want to see what Till's learned. I want to see what he's been doing with
Jemima.
Yeah, but
he'd play it defensively, surely. Like, he's not going to be like, oh, I'll go and take down this great jiu-jitsu guy.
Well, I don't know. I just think he could have made a real statement there because I think, obviously, training there with Chimaev, he went there to train one thing, and that was because Darren's stand-up, that's never to be questioned. He's got great Muay Thai. You know, he kicks so well. It was the ground game which we've seen him, you know, come unstuck. And I'd just be really interested to see how well-rounded Darren Till is now.
I think he was going there to train it defensively.
I imagine, so that he
wouldn't get taken down. But the other thing was, even more so than that, you look at his body in the Brunson fight, and don't get me wrong, I'm no Hercules, guys. Bursting your bubble here. But when you looked at Darren in that Derek Brunson fight, he didn't look like he'd been training really hard. He didn't look cut. He didn't look like he'd been focusing on his strength and conditioning and stuff like that. He looked a bit soft for a fighter at the elite level. He didn't look the way he's looked in previous fights, and it made me think: Are you mentally up for this? And then when he started training with Hamza, I was like, oh, fuck, he's turned a corner. He's up for this now. He's going to really go for this. He's training with a guy that is so hungry. He's going to push him all the way. And we're going to see the best Darren Till we've ever seen. And I was really excited for his comeback. And he's just had another setback. And if he did turn a corner, if mentally he went, you know what, I wasn't in the best place, and now I'm fucking ready to go, and then he's got injured again, That must be mentally devastating for you. So I really hope he comes through it and feels better.
He's a young man.
Yeah,
he's got a lot to look forward to. Jack Hermanson's now got has now got to look forward to fighting the Action Man, Chris Curtis. it doesn't massively excite me, this fight. It's decent. But it's obviously we wanted to see a Brit in the co-main. I'm quite a fan of Hermanson. I think he's a well-rounded, and he seems like a proper top fella as well. Looking through Chris Curtis's sort of CV, it's all right.
Do you know what? This is all about Chris Curtis for me. I really enjoy the Chris Curtis story. Didn't he retire twice in one night? Like, it was like he was in the PFL or something like that. Yeah.
Fuck off.
No, really? I think this is true. Someone else needs to go and check this for me because I'm too fucking, like, tired after hanging out with 20-year-olds to check this. But I'm pretty sure he was in the PFL and he had, like, it was one of those PFL nights where they did multiple fights in one night. And I think he fought, lost, retired. And then the guy that beat him got injured. So he came out of retirement after like an hour or half an hour to fight again. Fought, lost, retired again. So he retired like twice in one night.
I'm loving that.
And then has obviously gone back. So he's retired like three times in the short period of time or whatever. Gone back. Ended up getting into the UFC and has done really well in the UFC. And I think, as much as his resume and his name is nowhere near as big as Darren's,
just quickly, on his resume, quickly, I've just found the name that's the greatest name ever. He beat in 2017 via striking.
Was it Jack Della Maddalena?
No, it was Portland Pringle the Third.
Portland Pringle the Third. Oh my god, that's brilliant. Oh man. That
sorry, dude,
like
go on.
That sounds like a cartoon character.
I love it.
Portland Pringle the Third. He's got like a top hat and a big moustache and a monocle. I can't remember what it said, but no, I think stylistically, Chris Curtis might be a really bad matchup for Hermanson because Chris Curtis does hit hard and he's got that kind of sprawl and brawl thing. He's got like, again, good wrestling, but good defensive wrestling. And he just fought and beat Adolfo Vieira with that style, like avoiding constant takedowns. Like Vieira was just trying to take him down relentlessly. excuse me, and he just didn't get him down. And then Chris Curtis is hitting him with good boxing and strong shots. And I think Hermanson might struggle with that. The only kind of question mark on this for me is he fought Adolfo Vieira only less than a month, it would have been. Less than a month ago that he fought Vieira. Sometimes when you're cutting weight twice in such a short period of time, it can really impact your body. And also, how much had he gone, oh, I've won my fight, let me go and eat cake and drink beer and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then he's got the call going, oh, shit, I've now got like 10 days to go and fight one of the biggest fight of my life in London. He's got the travel and all that and weight cut and all that stuff to do as well. So that'll be really interesting to see if those things have affected him. But if those things haven't affected him, I think this actually could be a really tough night at the office for Jack Hermanson.
Okay. Is there anything more we want to sort of talk about on that, or should we move on?
Let's move on to Paddy.
Let's do that. I mean, what a placement on the card. I mean, he's you know, we can tell where that the, you know, what the fans are excited about, and they obviously want to see the baddie.
To be fair, because of where it, I know that a lot of people outside of the UK would roll their eyes and all this stuff, but with Till dropping out for the UK fans, you could have made Paddy the co-main. Don't you think? I know that he hasn't necessarily deserved it yet, because this is only like what his like third UFC fight or whatever it is. And I get that. And there's a lot of people who'd be going, oh, God, I so love Paddy this, and they're like moaning about it. But let's be completely honest. As you said, who are the fans in the O2 looking forward to seeing? And to be fair, I think the majority of the fans watching globally, who are they more interested in seeing? Hermanson, Chris Curtis, or Paddy Pimblett versus anyone?
Absolutely. Of course.
It's Paddy. It is Paddy.
So he's fighting Jordan Leavitt.
Leavitt.
I mean, good test for Paddy, this.
Jordan's good.
He's got, you know, where's he fighting out of? Someone's Syndicate.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot between them. You know, Paddy's got a 2-inch reach advantage, both 27. Like, it's a pretty well rounded fight. And
yeah, both good grapplers as well.
Yeah. I think
Paddy might have the edge in just like the sheer kind of toughness of the fight. Like, the sheer, like just blitzing forward with punches, I think, is something that Paddy might be able to worry Jordan with. I think on the ground it might be quite evenly matched. But, I think what's really interesting is going to see how Jordan responds to all of the kind of, like, furore around, like, a Paddy Pimblett fight in London. Because he said on Helwani a while ago that, like, he doesn't really like the attention too much. Like, he's turned off all of his Instagram notifications, and you're going to get a lot of attention when you fight Paddy.
But that, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's going to be tough. I didn't see that with Vargas. I thought he didn't seem fazed by it. I thought he seemed to handle it well in Paddy's last outing. But yeah, I'm just, it's clear that UFC now they've got a star on their hands with Paddy, and you know, they've put him at that point on the bill. When theoretically someone like Paul Craig should, if you look at records,
yes,
Paul Craig should be in that spot.
Yeah.
Or even co-main. but yeah, we know when you've got Paddy and Molly on a card, certainly when it's in the UK, there's going to be fireworks and noise. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We've had Paddy on this podcast a few times. He's such a top lad. But I mean, I guess that's what makes him such an exciting fighter, that he takes chances. And I always just think, oh, God, don't get... Because when he got caught in that first fight with Vendramini, I just thought, oh, God, please don't have your debut and get knocked out. And I know Scousers don't get knocked out, but when he says things like that, I think, oh, don't, God, no, that's literally a red rag to a bull, that somebody's going to want to be the first person to knock that Scouser out. But he's, you know, he's walking what he's talking, Paddy, and I'm on board. I'm right in the front carriage on the Paddy train, and I just hope it's another spectacular night. I like it when he gets roughed up a little bit because it makes the win even better, and it's all experience. Yeah. I think we're going to get a stoppage from Paddy. I don't think a knockout. I think we get a submission from Paddy on this.
Oh, really? Interesting. Mm. Yeah, no, I obviously want to see Paddy win. I think if he gets a finish, I think it will be more from strikes than from the grappling. So I think the grappling might be a bit more evenly matched. Jordan, leave it. Had in his interview with Helwani a while back, Jordan does these celebrations that seem to rub some people up the wrong way. I really enjoy them. He like will dance. He'll go down into the splits. He's done some twerking. He did the dirty dancing lift where someone lifted him like dirty dancing right. style, and like I think that's just funny. I really like that. And he said he's got a celebration planned that will start a riot in London. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to see it because I want to see Paddy win. But I really do want to know what the celebration
I think deep down you want to see that, don't you?
Not against Paddy, but against someone, I really do. Yeah, right. I want to know what's such a big deal that he's going to do that's going to cause so much uproar. But no, I definitely don't want to see it on the 23rd of July against Paddy. But yeah, but I quite like Jordan as a personality and as a fighter. I just don't want him to beat Paddy. So yeah, and I'll pick Paddy to win because I do think he might have the edge in the kind of if it gets into like a brawl type situation.
Yeah, and Paddy will bite down and throw as well. But I always worry when you've got such expectation and such roar of that crowd like behind you, like that. I just worry that, and I don't know why I'm worrying because he's an incredible talent, he's Paddy. But that moment where you just think, don't get caught up in the moment of the crowd and things like that, and just start thinking, right, I'm going to go for a blitz of a knockout here. Like,
but that's what fuels him, isn't it?
I know.
Paddy just feeds off of that. Oh, no. He's like Hulk Hogan back in the... I know you don't like your wrestling, but Hulk Hogan back in the day when he was about to get sleeper-holded, he would just like start reaching out to the audience and then they'd start giving him the power and then he'd start shaking and then all of a sudden they'd hit him and he'd just point his finger at him with it and he'd just flare his moustache and that's it.
I mean...
Leg drop city.
We'll get on to Father Christmas on the next episode, but the thing with wrestling is it would have already been written... Like, what was going to happen there? So, like, Hulk can really play out. Well, do you know what? I'll tell you about this afterwards, mate.
I don't understand what you mean.
Yeah, all right, mate.
Okay. Moving on to
crying?
Paul Craig.
Are you crying?
Have you seen that video, that meme where that big guy's in, like, the audience of some kind of, like, wrestling chat with, like, some kind of old wrestlers, and he's like, it's still real to me, damn it! Damn it, it's still real to me! It's fucking great. You have to watch it. He can't let go. God bless him. Paul Craig versus Volkan Uzdemir.
Is that what's next?
Well, that's what I'm going to talk about.
okay.
Yeah, I mean, look. As far as I'm concerned, Craig should be fighting a guy above him in the rankings.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, he's on like... I mean, I disregard the first Shogun Hua draw because that was a clear win for Craig. It was just the local 100%. Judges, I think, giving a draw to Shogun. And then obviously in the rematch between them, Craig dominated Shogun. I think Craig really technically should be on like some kind of like 5 or 6 fight win streak now with everything he's done. Uzdemir does represent a tough challenge, though. He's fought for a title before, and Uzdemir has fought some of the best of the best. I mean, Uzdemir's fought Daniel Cormier, Yuri Prohashka, Dominic Reyes, Rakic, Anthony Smith.
RSP.
I mean, he's fought a who's who of the light heavyweight division. So he's got loads and loads of experience. He is a dangerous fighter, but he's not on a great streak at the moment. I think he's lost quite a lot lately.
Well, his last two fights, he lost Ankalaev and Jiri.
Yeah, and his win before that was against...
Big Rakic.
Rakic, which I thought he lost. Was that? I'm pretty sure that was like a split decision. And I thought he lost that fight. But equally, he lost to Dominic Reyes on the Till Masvidal fight. And I thought he beat Reyes. So yeah, you can kind of interchange those a little bit. But he's not been on a great run of form of late. So I'm hoping Paul Craig can win this. And I think should be getting right up there in title contention soon. Because he's finishing guys quick as well. Look what he did to Jamal Hill and Krylov in the last fight in London. So yeah, I'm really hoping Paul Craig does the business. But the one thing that Paul Craig's had in his favour of late is people have been really ignorant towards his BJJ, and they have allowed him to clinch up and drag them to the ground or followed him to the ground. Krylov.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Followed him to the ground. Mm. And you're just like, mate, what are you doing? And Uzdemir, you would imagine, is a veteran of the sport now. He's not going to play that game. He's not going to be that stupid. If he knocks Craig down or there is a body lock situation, if you're Uzdemir, you just want to separate and get distance immediately. And surely, after what Paul Craig has done in his last few fights, fighters are now aware, oh, we can't play the ground game with this guy. He will find a way to win. Like what he did in the Ankalaev fight a few years ago with like 1 second left in a round and he locked up that triangle. Just don't go to the ground with Paul Craig. So Craig has to find more innovative ways of getting people there, trying to close distance and clinch up. But Volkan's got really strong hands and closing that distance isn't always going to be easy. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, but I'm leaning towards Craig and I'm hoping for Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. Bear you all the way, mate.
Full bear you.
What do you want to talk about? Should we talk about Gus?
We can talk about Gus. That's so annoying for Craig, because Craig was meant to fight Gustafsson
in
205. The fight was delayed and stopped Craig fighting because he was like, no, I really want to fight Gus, so I'll wait for Gus to get healthy. I really want to fight Gus. Then Gus goes, oh no, actually I'm going to go and fight at heavyweight. So Craig's like, oh for fuck's sake, now I've got to fight Krylov instead. Fine. Deals with him. And now they're on the same card in London and Gus is fighting at 205. Craig must be furious.
Yeah. I mean, again, like Uzdemir's a fight that Paul Craig aren't necessarily ranked behind him, I'm sure. And Gustafsson obviously isn't ranked anymore, but as we spoke about before when we thought this fight was going to happen, it's a huge name.
Huge name.
And should we say that again? It's a huge name.
Huge name!
I'm looking forward to seeing Gus back in the O2 anyway. And you know, Paul Craig, Uzdemir aside, I'm a big fan of Alexander. I think he's just a top dude and a real badass. And I'm just I don't really know how this fight's going to go. I don't know. You can't really say too much you don't know. How long has Gus been out for? It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
When was his last fight?
I mean, I've got to be honest. I don't care that much.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And I'm putting it out there.
Yeah,
I'm disappointed that Gus isn't fighting Craig. I don't think Gus is what he was. Krylov is a fine fighter, but is he going to fight for a belt one day? I don't think so. So, yeah.
His last fight was he lost via armbar to Verdum in 2020.
Yeah. So no wonder he doesn't want to fight Craig then.
Like, yeah, good point. Good point. But, so, right, okay, so let me just make a note, another fighter that Blake doesn't like.
You're the one that calls everyone melts. You're the one that has to be careful. You're going to walk into the wrong arena one day and someone's going to be like, I listened to that show, and you're going to be like, oh, shit, he's one of the ones I called a melt.
Oh, I'll tell you the only ones I've called. Who have I called a melt?
Colby.
Bryce Mitchell. Colby.
Bryce Mitchell. Sean O'Malley.
Yeah.
There's been plenty others.
DC, did I call DC one on the podcast, or am I just being on WhatsApp?
You've called a lot of people melts. Like you should have like Stu Whiffin's melt list.
A meltdown.
Stu Whiffin's meltdown. Just a huge list of fighters.
Top 10 meltdown.
That Stu would only ever be incredibly polite to if he ever met them face to face. But on this
I'm not going
to
call any of them people
like,
melts, am
melt,
I? They'd he's melt. Destroy me.
He's a melt. That one's a melt.
Oh dear, oh dear. I love Gus, and I know you don't, but you know
I do like Gus. I'm disappointed for Paul, and I just don't. I think in terms of what's at stake in that fight, I don't think there's a huge amount. Like it's nice to have Gus on the card. He's a big name. That's lovely.
Yeah. Okay.
Moving on.
All right.
Right, Molly McCann's fighting. Got to talk about Molly because we love Molly.
Of course.
She's fighting Hannah Goldie. Hannah Goldie, not got the best record. She's lost her first two UFC fights, but won her last fight via armbar. But she was losing that fight up until the armbar. I think Molly has fought tougher opponents and beaten tougher opponents than Hannah Goldie. So this should, I think, be a win for Molly. What will be interesting is to see what the size difference will be between them, because Hannah Goldie has fought at strawweight, but when you look at Hannah Goldie, you're like, fuck me, you're a tank. She is very, very muscular for someone that's fought at strawweight and is now at featherweight. I don't know how she lost that extra 10 pounds to fight at strawweight. And I wouldn't be surprised if part of the game plan for Hannah Goldie is just to push Molly up against the fence and sort of hold her there.
Yeah.
And try and nullify Molly a little bit rather than kind of like hitting her with big strikes or anything like that. Just really nullifying Molly for a while and doing that. So I think Molly's got to be careful of that and not get too frustrated if that does happen for a bit and just, you know, just do what Molly does really, really well, which is just fucking fight like an absolute demon. So I don't know. I'm expecting Molly to win this one. I don't think Goldie's got a huge amount to trouble Molly with. But again, the strength thing might be interesting just to see who has it in the strength department, because Goldie, as I say, she's built. And she could be a lot to contend with in those kind of clinches up against the fence and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. People's champ all day long for me, Molly McCann. She's got this.
I really hope someone's got a fake belt again and she can just walk around the cage with a fake belt. That is it. That should be her gimmick. After every win, she just walks around with a fake belt and just is like, and that is it. Then that's people's champ. That's it. That is the one. That's the gimmick. Do that.
Finally, we're going to see Nathaniel Wood back in the octagon against Charles Rosa. Nate was meant to have fought on the last card at the O2. Then on that card would have been the only Londoner fighting on that bill. His opponent got injured, and Nate was literally left high and dry. What was it? It was even like less than a week before the fight, wasn't it? And
even got a replacement, which was Shalinian, but then obviously Shalinian's Ukrainian.
That's right.
So, like, the first opponent was injured, I think. Then Chiellini stepped in, but then everything happened in Ukraine, and he was like, well, I need to stay and fight for my country, which is completely understandable. But as you say, Nathan was left without a fight, which is really shit for Wood. But he's getting a fight this time, and it's at featherweight. He's making his featherweight debut. I think he's clearly had enough of the horrible weight cuts down to bantamweight, and he's fighting Charles Rosa, who's a good fighter at featherweight.
Yeah, I mean, his record's showing not the best run. He's lost four of his last six, and I mean, don't get me wrong, he's lost to fighters like Bryce Melt Mitchell, but he's has literally come off two losses. Like.
Had to get it in, didn't you?
Oh dear. I mean, if anyone thinks Bryce Mitchell ain't a melt, then I don't know. You're a melt.
He might be a lovely human being. He's just got some very oddball views that I think are not the best.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I would never put a pair of his socks on.
Oh, fucking hell, that story. Oh, God, that was so grim. That was so gross.
It wasn't even his socks either.
Oh, if you're not aware of it, James Krause, who is a UFC... Is he welterweight or lightweight, James Krause? I can't remember. But he... and he's a coach as well. And fucking Bryce Mitchell is at his house and seems to just go off and go for a nap. And, I mean, you find this clip on YouTube, but the short story is that Bryce Mitchell borrowed a pair of James Krause's socks, then went into his bedroom, knocked one out on his bed, came on the floor, and then wiped it up with the socks that James Krause had given him, but kept the socks on and wore them to the arena for his fight.
I think he wore them on the weigh-in.
Was it the weigh-in?
Or the face-off or something like that. Now, apparently he said he'd had a phone conversation. He said to James, "Oh, my girlfriend phoned me up, so you know how it is." And it was just like, no, dude.
Mate, it's never like that. It's never been like that. What the fuck are you doing?
Would also say that James Krause, his Instagram breakdowns and stuff are really interesting. Like, I would definitely say go give him a follow if you're not already, because he's... top dude, like from way back in, when he was on The Ultimate Fighter to becoming a legit, coach now. He's got some badass fighters under him. Anyway, we digress. So hopefully get to see a big win for the Londoner in London on that night.
Yeah. Mohamed Makhachev?
I mean, this is the one, isn't it, that... You know, we've got our big hype machine that is Paddy the Baddy Pimlet. We've got Ian Garry that, he looks like they're choosing a more sort of slower route into stardom for Ian Garry than what they're doing with Paddy. But I think the one that everybody's also got one eye on is Mohamed Makhachev, who he looked devastating, didn't he, in his last outing. And
his UFC debut as well.
Yeah, I mean, like,
yeah, he's the one that you go. Lots of UK fighters at the moment and Irish fighters have got the potential to do really, really well. But you look at Mohamed Makhachev and you go, if this guy's not a champion, I'll be really, really surprised. Like, there's other fighters where you go, oh, they could do this, they could do that. I think they're a really great fighter, blah, blah. But if you had to say to me, put money on any one of those prospects of which one will definitely be a champion all day long, you put your money on Mohamed Makhachev.
Yeah.
He just looks unbelievable. He had such an illustrious amateur career. And I just think he's going to steamroll through so much of that flyweight division.
Yeah.
He's fighting, is it Charles Johnson?
Yeah.
Johnson's making his UFC debut, and I think if you're making your UFC debut and you're going up against a killer like Makhachev, it's not going to end well for you. He's got a decent amount of experience. He's 11-2, and on top of that, he's had a bunch of boxing fights, most of which he's lost. But he's got that experience in the boxing, so he should have good hands. He's never been finished by anyone in any combat sport, as far as I'm aware. He's not been finished in his boxing or his MMA fights. So it's a good challenge for Makhachev. Charles Johnson represents a very tough guy. He'll be hungry because he's on his UFC debut, but I can't see where he really causes Makhachev too many problems. I think Makhachev should deal with him pretty convincingly, and then, this train's going to roll on and on until we get to the top of the division.
I'd be interested to see how quickly the UFC move him. Like, if he gets this win, are they going to do the? I mean, he's got plenty to say, Muhammad Makhachev. He's not a Paddy the Baddy, you know. He's not as marketable at the moment. I wonder how they're going to play him. Are they going to go, look, this guy is clearly a threat. Everybody's been talking about him, you know, in other organisations. And, you know, are we going to see him sort of push quite quickly? Because I think, by the sounds of it, he wants that. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you make your debut in London in front of that crowd. Your second fight is in London in front of that crowd. You know, the experience he's going to be getting from them kind of stages is absolutely, you know, essential. And so, you know, bank all of that and then, yeah, get out to the States and start fighting some nastier people. And I just hope that they push him quite quickly, because I think his background, he's earned his stripes. So let's see how his journey continues in the UFC. But I'm picking Makhachev on this.
Yeah.
Great to see Jai back on the card. He's fighting Carl Nelson. Obviously, the last trip to UFC London against Topuria, you know, finished with that fucking terrifying right hook. In round two, you know, we're big fans of Jai on this podcast. Yeah, hopefully we're going to see him, you know, come back. And I mean, again, how much can you learn from a loss like that? He just got, as we said about Jack Shore at the beginning, he just got caught flush, and
he was doing well in the fight.
He was looking great.
So he was doing well.
Yeah, and I'm. Yeah, just looking at Carl Nelson's record, he's lost three of his last five. I'm going to go with Jai on this, because I think he's a real talent, and I think he's got something to prove. You know, was he the only London fighter? Oh no, Corrie lost as well, didn't she? The only UK fighter that lost in the O2 last time. So I think Jai is going to be keen to make a statement here, and I can't wait to see it.
Absolutely. On top of that, friend of the show as well, Mason Jones, is fighting Ludovic Klein. So good luck to Mason. I think he might even be opening the whole show, maybe.
I believe so.
So yeah, good luck to Mason. And then also Mark Diakasi's back against Hadzovic. So, yeah, lots of great British fighters to watch on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Cage Warriors on the Friday as well. If you're fans of your MMA, then you're all going to know that we've got Hardwick fighting for a belt. It's George, isn't it? It's not Harry. It's George's fighting
George
for the belt.
George Hardwick's fighting for the lightweight belt, yeah.
And if you're fans of the Hardwick brothers, well, if you're not fans of the Hardwick brothers, go and listen to the previous episodes we've had on if you're unaware of who they are, because they are solid gold. And go and watch Harry Hardwick's last fight in Cage Warriors.
Oh man. My
God.
Incredible. Like,
absolutely wonderful. And so best of luck to George this Friday. If you've not been to a Cage Warriors event before, get yourself along to one, because they're absolutely wonderful. Definitely, for me, you know, the best organisation to go and watch events at outside of the UFC. Just looking at this card, you know, on Saturday, the amount of fighters that have gone into the UFC through Cage Warriors, from Tom, from Jack Hermanson, Paddy Pimlet, Molly McCann, Paul Craig. Was Paul Craig Cage Warriors?
No, I think he was Bama.
Yeah, go watch Nate Wood's fights in Cage Warriors.
Oh, they were great.
Yeah, Jai Herbert, And obviously Jones. Mason Jones was two-weight champion.
Yes, he was.
So, that's the kind of stuff you get at a Cage Warriors show. Right. That's the weekend that you've got to look forward to. I hope you, if you haven't caught up on last weekend's fights, go watch them, because last night's action was wonderful. We're back next time.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Huge name.